Hey guys, Jack here. Unfortunately, there's no normal episode this week because everyone was so busy that we couldn't actually get together to record. But luckily enough, Ted Janet went back to McKinnon Secondary, where he was about 9 months ago, and recorded an interview with Adam Van Langenberg, who runs the Skeptic School High School Club at that school. He's also joined by Elizabeth Raikkonen, who is a 16-year-old high school student at McKinnon, who's also a writer for the Young Australian Skeptics blog. So they have a bit of a chat all about high school skepticism, how to communicate as a skeptic, and also pressing needs for skepticism. It's a great chat, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello, everyone. We have returned to McKinnon Secondary College with Adam Van Langenberg, who you will remember as the maths teacher who runs a skeptics club for the high school students. With him is Liz Raikkonen. Did I get that right?
Yep, they'll do.
So Liz is Adam's student and sort of the protege apprentice. She represents him in public sometimes, and if she says or does anything wrong, it reflects poorly on him. How are we going, Adam?
That's I think you've pretty much summed it up. Unfortunately, she doesn't do too many wrong things outside of school, so I'm safe so far.
But she does do them in school.
Oh, in school, hell yes. Yeah, absolutely.
I like the fact that you haven't actually found out about what I do out of school. So that's a good sign that I'm good at covering stuff up.
That's good. That's what I want.
Yeah.
Well, you have done some things outside of school, because the other night we went to Skeptics Cafe, mm-hmm. run by the Victorian Skeptics. Tell us about your talk and what you talked about.
Well, for an hour I ranted about my experiences, really. I talked a bit about gender issues. That went down better than I thought it would in the environment. Also, I talked about demographics, and I really just catered the talk to the people and their expressions, depending on what subject I was talking about. So that worked pretty well.
What's been happening? Because it's been about 9 months. I'll start with you, Adam. What's been happening in the 9 months since we last talked in terms of the Skeptics Club, and what activities?
Well, so far we've still been coming down from the Hive, having James Randi speak to us. It's that as great as that was, it's been very difficult this year to try to think, wow, what can we do that even comes close, mm-hmm. to the great Randi coming and speaking to us. So this year we've just been carrying on as normal so far. You know, our weekly meetings are still going strong. Been going over lots of different topics. We've been speaking about aliens. We did a little standard astrology experiment where everybody gets a whole bunch of astrology descriptions and then they've got to try to guess which one is their star sign. I've done that a couple of times. It's really good because you only ever get 1 out of 12 people on average guessing it correctly, yeah. which is mathematically exactly what we should expect. The last couple of things, actually last few weeks, we've been watching this documentary that, I forget what it's called, but it's narrated by Morgan Freeman, and it's about the six senses and ESP. So it's completely believable because it's done in Morgan Freeman's voice, which makes it really, really hard to try to come up with any arguments.
Oh, so it's designed to persuade people that ESP is real.
Well, we've only managed to get through the first third of it. One of the fantastic / difficult things about going over any topic with these kids is that it takes hours longer than we expect because they want to ask so many questions. So yeah. We've got 45 minutes for lunch. I'll say, okay, let's watch this video. It's 45 minutes long. That should fit fine. And then by the end of lunchtime, we go, right, we just got through 5 minutes of video. And the other 40 minutes has been taken up with questions, which is...
That's not a bad thing.
Fantastic. Yeah. No, I love it. One, I love the fact that they're asking questions. And two, I love the fact that it means I don't have to come up with something completely new every single week. We can just say, right, let's continue what we did last time. So that documentary has started to get a little bit into the weird pseudoscience-y stuff. Mm-hmm. The first part of it seemed a bit more rational. It was looking at blind people whose eyes still function, but the connection between their eyes and their visual cortexes, mm-hmm. were impaired, and how they could still pick up on certain things, depending on what types of their brains were damaged. So that was interesting, but still lots of questions and kids wanting to go, what's going on there? That actually doesn't sound too bad. Ooh, that sounds a little bit funny. Can we talk about this? Should we trust this documentary because it's Morgan Freeman?
And so I imagine that your approach is to not so much tell them what is and what isn't pseudoscience, but give them the tools to sort of figure it out for themselves.
Absolutely. I mean, when we started, and everybody, except for Liz, of course, everybody else was very new at all of this,
yeah.
Then, yeah, there was more of me showing, okay, this is what to look for. These are some things about pseudoscience. It'd be me saying, you know, all right, let's learn about astrology. Let's learn about this. Let's learn about that. But now, because most of the kids have had a lot more experience, I don't have to do nearly as much as that. I can just say, hey, let's watch this video, let's read this article, let's do something like that, and then just completely leave it up to the kids to ask questions and to make comments on it. And, I mean, they're brilliant. They always come up with things. Yeah. Every single time, they come up with things that I'd never even have thought of.
So, Liz, you've been with the group now for how many years?
Well, it would be about a bit more than a year now.
A year. So you've seen it change. What do you think, say, during your duration has... What have you noticed about the group?
Funnily enough, when I'm listening to Morgan Freeman, I can't argue with that. It's the voice of God. It sounds fantastic. And I'm sort of going along with it. Like, I usually only... with a documentary like that, I'll just go with it and then question it afterwards. So I'm listening to all these other kids asking great questions. And then I sort of step back and realise that I've sort of just fallen in love with his voice and stop thinking. That's what I've noticed. I'm really pessimistic about myself, but everyone else is great.
So are you, when there's some kind of point of controversy or a question, do the other students look at you?
Not really, no. I don't actually speak that much at lunchtimes.
No, she's very quiet.
No, quieter than I usually would be. Because everyone else has points to make, and I don't know, I can't really add much more to the argument. But there are a lot of smart kids there, and they'll ask the questions. I'll just sit back and be amused.
So in terms of the group makeup, is it the same kids plus more? Are people coming and going?
It's always... well, we've got a core group.
Yeah.
There's Liz. There are a few others. It's probably about... maybe about 15 or so, 15 to 20 kids that are the regulars that come along all the time. And then we get drop-ins, people will come in for a few weeks, and then people will leave. And sometimes people will come along because their friends have brought them in. Or they might... Often kids will come along just because they like the topic. So every week I'll put a thing on the news feed that just says, today we're going to talk about this or that or the other. And you'll get kids coming along, they say, oh, I just want to learn this. Actually, there was that period for a while where we had this group of... I'll use the word ratty, I guess, right, to be sort of as careful as I can of people who... of kids who I found hiding in the room because the weather was bad outside and they didn't want to go outside, so they were hiding in that room hoping they wouldn't get caught. And I opened the door and I said, nah, sorry guys, you've got to get out. We've got our Skeptics Club here. And they said, oh, well, can we stick around? I said, oh, sure, if you want to stick around, stick around. And they stayed in there and they listened. And then at the end of it, they said, that was actually really interesting. Can we come back? Absolutely come back. And that group, it's probably another 15 boys, came back about 3 or 4 more times, I think. And then the weather got really good and they decided to stop coming and play down ball again. But the fact was...
Well, you made a difference in their life for an interlude of time.
Even for that small time, they still came in and got to experience a little bit of what skepticism's about and got to see a bit of, okay, this is how we can think about things and challenge things.
Have you heard any stories about... things that, say, kids have learned in skepticism popping up in other classes or different subjects, like science or even literature in arguing. Does that happen? Maybe, Liz, you're better poised
to... Yeah, no. I've found out my friends are pretty much all skeptically minded, especially my science class. They're pretty good. I mean, they'll call out bullshit really quickly. Not so much my other classes. Oh, a bunch of the philosophy kids I know. They're pretty...
Philosophy kids?
Yes, philosophy kids.
We've got a very strong philosophy club here that I believe in the... was it the Australasian philosophy? Philosophathon, I think McKinnon.
All right, so why didn't this exist when I was here? This is terrible.
We're just waiting.
And the Skeptics Club as well.
Yeah. Well, you can always come back.
So I suffered through loneliness and hardship.
Shave the beard and convince us you're 15 and you can come back in.
There's a really interesting dichotomy with the philosophy kids. Sometimes they're very airy-fairy, they're very sort of out of it, and they'll wonder about everything, but other times they're more scientifically minded than... they just won't go off on tangents. They'll stick to an actual sort of argument, which I was really surprised about. I had some because Melbourne High has a really good philosophy department, apparently. So I have a lot of friends that went to Melbourne High that are really involved in that, and they're also pretty skeptically minded. So I'm surprised how much it's sort of spread.
Well, there's a lot of crossover between the two as well, philosophy and skepticism. I think I might offend a few people here, but I'm going to say I think skepticism's easier than philosophy because a lot of our questions are answerable.
That's true.
Yeah.
A lot of our things we can just say, well, we're not sure about this, let's go and look at the evidence. Oh, that's what the answer is. Where in philosophy, there seems to be a lot more. We're never going to know what the answer is.
But let's argue
about it. For hours and hours.
I don't think that's offensive. I mean, I think formal logic is a kind of philosophy, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So, Liz, what's it like being the skeptic girl?
Oh, it's not that bad, really. I just get some... when I'm arguing with friends, I'm very careful about what I say to them, and usually it's usually alternative medicine. It's usually something like acupuncture or chiropractic. Otherwise, they're pretty much on par with me. This science is a lot more, it's respected a lot, I've noticed, a lot more than I thought it would have been.
So have you thought about strategies in which you persuade people of arguments?
Yeah, funnily enough, I used to be with the whole Phil Plait camp, you know, don't be a dick sort of thing. And the other day I was actually listening to Penn Jillette rant on about how you shouldn't be manipulative in conversation. And if you're going to... If you know the other person is wrong and you really believe that they're wrong, then you might as well just say they're wrong. So I'm sort of stuck between the two camps now. I don't really know what to think or how to argue.
Well, this is the question I want to put to you, Adam, is what do you think is the best strategy in a personal level? Not obviously as a teacher, you're tasked with administering information that has some authority and some validity. But on a personal level, when we skeptics and your students guide and engage with people, what is the strategy we should take, in your opinion?
I'm 100% in Phil Plait's camp on that one there. I think as much as I love Penn Jillette, if I was going to hire a magician, I'd be hiring Penn over Phil Plait.
Not tell
him. But that being said, I think if you go into something too strong, if you go into something too aggressively, then you risk losing your entire message. You risk the people not listening to what you're saying and only listening to the way you're saying it, and then deciding that you're a jerk and I'm not going to listen to you anymore. And you know, I think that's sort of fair enough. If you go and talk to somebody quite aggressively and they turn around and say, I don't want to talk to you anymore, well, that's absolutely correct. Of course they're not going to want to talk to you. So you've got to be, I think, careful to, one, make sure you're listening as much as you're speaking, which is something that I find really hard to do because I love listening to my own voice more than anybody else's.
This is true.
But it's an expression about a pot and a kettle that I want to throw out right now.
Fair enough.
You've got to listen to what the other people have to say. Seriously take it into account, not just dismiss it immediately, even if you know that it's wrong.
Yeah.
Still take it into consideration. And then instead of just saying, I think you're wrong, propose alternatives or suggest reasons that they could be wrong.
I've had the experience, and I don't know if either of you can relate to this, but I am sort of known as a grumpy skeptic, and when I see something that I think is pseudoscientific or silly, I often complain about it a little bit violently. And when a friend who knows me as this told me that they were going to participate in some kind of pseudoscience, I very carefully and delicately tried to say there are reservations about doing this, and it caused a lot of trouble simply because I was known as the skeptic. Do we have a solution for this? Is it possible to save ourselves from this kind of thing?
I think that really depends on how you handle conversations with people like that and how people like that are going to respond to it. I mean, if they're, you know, if it's friends of yours and you know how they're going to respond, you might actually think, no, in this case here, I do want to be really firm and tough with them.
Yeah.
Just because I know that person well and I know that that's what they're going to listen to.
Well, sometimes it's okay to say nothing, maybe.
Yeah, well, I think in a case of friendships, you've got to make the decision what's more important to me, the relationship or what they're doing. And then that depends on what they're doing. You know, if I've got a friend who I'm really close to, and they're saying, oh, I'm really into acupuncture. And I think, oh, if I start getting stuck into them about it, I'm going to lose that friendship. Yeah. Well, then, you know what? Acupuncture is not the worst thing in the world that a person can do. Yeah. But if somebody said, oh, I'm going to a psychic and I'm spending, you know, $1,000 a week on them and I'm doing everything they tell me, oh, they've told me to divorce my husband or wife or something like that, then that gets to the point where you think, you know what? That's not as important as our friendship. I want to try to help this person. And if it means losing the friend, well, then you lose the friend.
And do you have stubborn, sort of argumentative kids who really want to make the point for their pseudoscience in the group?
No, not when it comes to stuff like this. Do I have stubborn, argumentative kids? Absolutely.
When it
comes to things like this, I've mentioned this before in a few of the talks I've given. Kids, typically, and I'm being general here, most kids don't have that much baggage that they can't afford to throw it overboard.
Yeah.
If you talk to an adult who is really, really set in their ways, then those are some deep grooves to try to get them to run out of, and it can be hard to get them to listen to anything else. You talk to a 14, 15, 16-year-old kid, and they say, oh, I think this, and you can say to them, oh, well, have you considered these reasons why that might be wrong? 9 times out of 10, your teenager's just going to go, oh, okay, that's interesting. Now, they may not change their mind, but they will generally give it a lot of thought. It's really amazing how skeptical kids are. They'll believe things quite readily, but at the same time, they're quick. They're completely willing to change their own beliefs.
I've noticed this from some of the rants I give, because among my friends, I think I've come to be known as opinionated, but not argumentative.
Not just amongst your friends.
But that's the thing. When you have an opinion, people call you opinionated as though it's a bad thing.
Well, if they call you opinionated if your opinion differs to their own.
But funnily enough,
you have to hold it strongly.
Funnily enough, they see it as in a positive light. Like every time I've talked to friends and we're having a deep and meaningful conversation, they always say, oh yeah, you're so opinionated. You know where you stand on stuff. You're really sure of yourself, which is not quite right. I'm not sure of myself in a lot of ways, but when it comes to science, I usually am, and I usually do have an opinion. But the fact that they see me in a positive light really surprised me. I think it's sort of the way I approach conversations. I sort of rant at my friends, but when they come to me with something I won't quite agree with, I'm incredibly diplomatic. But otherwise, mm-hmm. I'll rant at them, and they'll just take it, I suppose.
Yeah, you have to be diplomatic. And it's interesting mm-hmm. you're saying about opinionated, because I tend to think that we shouldn't be opinionated mm-hmm. as skeptics. We should have, I mean, obviously we should have opinions and we should hold strongly to the principles of skepticism, but we should be willing to change our beliefs and our opinions at the drop of a hat. If we really stridently believe something and then we discover good, proper, real, solid, legitimate evidence that we are wrong, we should be able to just suddenly go, oh, okay, I was wrong.
But you're still going to be called close-minded. Yeah. It's like that's kind of...
You're still going to be called close-minded.
That's the nightmare. And you're especially trying to explain that actually you're open-minded, but you're controlling the flow.
Open-minded just means listening and considering all arguments. I mean, I've had arguments with people where they'll use close-minded as an attack. I'll say, but hang on a minute, I'm considering your side of the argument, I'm considering my side of the argument, I'm looking at the evidence on both sides, and I'm choosing which side I feel has the most evidence. That's open-minded. Somebody who goes around saying, oh, I believe in psychics and I refuse to consider anybody who tells me otherwise, that's what closed-minded is.
I think it also comes from a teenager's viewpoint, because a teenager's often... The world's a lot bigger. They look at politics and they see like a lot of facts, a lot of information, and they're not quite handling it well. So anyone that dares to grasp at the information and form an opinion on it automatically becomes like something to admire almost.
Well, so you meet a lot of people who don't seem to have strong opinions about anything. Or they're different, and it almost seems alien when you're a skeptic and you like so passionately care about these things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like that as well. And people say, oh, no, I don't really care, you know, if acupuncture or whatever.
Why does it bother you?
Are you kidding me? Come on.
What do you think are the most important skeptical issues? Because I know there's a perception sometimes that the skeptical movement is just, you know, disproving Bigfoot and homeopathy over and over again. So what are the, you know... I want to hear from both of you the most pressing things that you think skepticism, the world needs skepticism for.
I think it's interesting that you say homeopathy there. I think that's one. I think that is an incredibly important one, because that's dangerous. That's patently dangerous. And I think we use homeopathy a lot because it's so easy to explain to people what it works. I mean, most people who use, or a lot of people I've spoken to who have used homeopathy or are aware of it, don't actually know what it is, the ideas behind it. And then normally it just takes 5 minutes and you say, oh, this is actually how it works. And they go, ah, well, that seems stupid. But it, as far as what, like, specific issues, I think just anything that's dangerous, which in most cases happens to be medicine and alternative medicines. I think we've got to, you know, it's no point trying to convince people of the, the illogic of skepticism, of skepticism, well, that was Freudian, the illogic of psychics and things like that when they're dying because they're taking homeopathic cancer remedies and things like that. I think you've got to go for the big things first, and then you can start to go down into the more philosophical aspects of it.
Well, a big one people like to talk about is climate science. Have you done anything about that in climate?
We haven't done anything in climate science because I don't know anything about climate science.
Okay, right.
We have spoken a little bit though about how to deal skeptically with a topic that you don't actually know anything about. And my idea with climate science is I don't know anything about it, so I am not going to form my own opinion because it's completely invalidated. I'm going to go to the experts on that.
Yeah.
And then it comes down to, you know, not just one expert, but looking at the general scientific consensus, which I think at the moment they're saying about 97% of climate scientists are saying, yes, the climate's changing. Yes, we have something to do with it. So from my point of view, I have no personal attachment to it. So I'm going to say, if that's what the scientific consensus is, then that's what I'm going to go with. And if I find out in 5 years' time they say, whoops, we were wrong, then fine, I'll go with them.
It might be worth you talking about guests to have in the class.
Yeah, that is...
scientists might be a good point of call.
Yeah, there are actually a couple of teachers around here who are quite into it. One thing I was planning a little while ago, we just sort of never got around to it, was having a bit of a debate. There's... one teacher who's a fantastic teacher who headed up an environmental group for a while, and he's right into the science of it. And then we have another teacher who's right into the conspiracy of it, and he believes that, global warming, it's a big scam, and that there are all these scientists that are getting paid lots of money by whoever to say that the climate is changing. So
I don't think that's a fair debate.
But it would be an interesting debate to watch, so people could see, you know, the two sides coming out. I mean, obviously, I'm aware of, you know, false balance and things like that, but just trying to see what some of the difference in opinions are.
Have you thought about getting any more, I don't know if it's fair to call them pseudoscientists in this context, practitioners of alternative medicine or...
Yeah, absolutely. That there are a lot of businesses in the area around here, sort of in the East Bentley area where we've got
tarot.
Just around the corner from the school. Yeah, there's a tarot shop and they have tarot reading classes. There's a little alleyway just a few minutes down that's got there's a Reiki healer and a crystal energy healer and things like that. So yes, absolutely, getting somebody like that to come in after the success of the homeopath talk.
Yeah.
That's something like that is definitely on the cards. Unfortunately, this has been a ridiculously hectic year, so I've sort of just had to keep chugging along without being able to go off and do a whole lot of more interesting things. But plans for next year, absolutely.
Have you thought about recording classes for any kind of broadcasts? That just came to me now, because it sounds like the interaction with the students and their questions is something worth...
Yeah. Look, to be perfectly honest, no, I hadn't thought about doing that, but I think that could be quite a good idea, actually.
All right, so I think there's just a couple more questions, and I'm going to put it to you in slightly different ways.
I never finished the one.
I'm sorry, go.
That's all right, I just remembered.
No, sorry, do you need some more attention?
Absolutely. Yeah, hey, okay. You've spoken more than I have at this point.
I beg your pardon.
Please
continue.
It's all good. This is actually something I've been thinking about a lot, because my brother, my older one, the one that you know, actually, we were having some sort of family meetup. It was some birthday and we were sitting around the table, and he asked me what it was about, and sort of very pointedly, and
he asked you what was about.
Yeah, what skepticism was
yes.
about. And I sort of at that point struggled. This was right after the conference, and everyone had heard about it, and I was sort of nervous to tell them anything about it, and I started talking about alternative medicine. It turned out a couple of my family members were alternative medicine practitioners, which I did not know. That turned out well. So I got
that's funny stone videos right there.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my family gets heated on occasion. So
when you're older, you'll understand. You know.
Fair enough. Yeah. So I started thinking about what skepticism, I can't even speak anymore, should actually be. And I think it's all about science and appreciation of science, because it's all well and good to... Oh, sneaky, Mr. B. It's all well and good to go after alternative practitioners, but if... I think it's the science that we really need to concentrate on, and it's the communication of science as a concept.
Hmm. But it's got to be the communication mm-hmm. of it, because to most people, science is boring. Science is just something you had to do at school. You know, you got to light the Bunsen burners and smell the gas, which was fun, but other than that, it was a little bit dull. So, yeah, you're right. It's all about putting it out there in a way that's not going to alienate anybody. If you just went up to a random person and gave them a science magazine, you know, that's going to completely turn them off. So it's got to be done in a way that's not alienating them, not condescending to them at the same time, and he's also making them go, oh, that's actually kind of interesting.
I try and think about skepticism in terms of everyday skepticism, and I'm sure you guys do as well. You have skeptical thoughts every day, and the most common experience I have is something that's being marketed at me, or something that I see if it's on Today Tonight about the newest weight loss scheme.
Mm.
I'm very sensitive to the way in which words and information are manipulated, and that's something people could, if they learn skepticism, become better consumers.
That was the first thing that I was really skeptical about. When I was like 3 or 4, I was listening to all my siblings talk about, oh, these ads are such bullshit. And I learned to laugh at every single hair ad, every single cream ad, pretty much every ad. And that's how I learned to be skeptical when I was like 3 or 4. And that's how I got that into that mindset really early on. So, yeah.
Businesses knowingly or unknowingly manipulate people.
Mm-hmm.
Whether, you know, and being skeptical helps you to negotiate, okay, well, what is it that I'm really buying?
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I mean, that's actually like to sort of protect yourself against marketing attempts
yeah.
like that. There's one tenet to follow, which is just if it looks too good to be true, it probably is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if a lot of people could get that idea, then, I mean, honestly, that would kill so much of that dodgy marketing. Oh, I'm just... drink this
yeah.
detox thing and
if
you'll
people were less gullible,
lose weight
yeah,
in a week.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that actually sounds a little bit too easy, so it's probably not true. Come to our gym and work hard for 6 months and you'll lose weight.
Yeah.
Ooh, that sounds really difficult, so it's probably more likely to be true.
Okay, I want to come back to you, so we'll start with you, Liz. You're selling skepticism to everyone you know. How do you do it? Briefly.
Oh, briefly. I give them an impassioned rant and then watch them giggle and then sort of start thinking. That's how I do it. I give them the shock value first. I pretty much scream at their face with some really enraged speech, and then they sort of start to think about it after
yeah.
I've calmed down.
So what you mean is you basically bully them into submission.
Pretty much, yeah. This is how I deal with life.
You know, we have a strict anti-bullying stance at this school, right?
Oh, yeah.
I remember the code of conduct that we all laughed at and tore up and threw at the kid next to us who was small. All right, so Adam, you're being put in charge of communicating skepticism to Australia. What
an honour.
What are your 3 precepts?
Make it accessible. Make it funny. Make it interesting.
Okay.
I think make it so interesting that people that hear about it then want to go and tell their friends about it.
One cool way on that point, do you think pop culture could be used as a means? Like,
oh, hell yes. Look at what Lawrence Lung has done with
yeah.
his TV series, Unbelievable. I mean, that's pop culture, that's funny, that's
yeah.
interesting, it's accessible. It's like stealth skepticism. It doesn't look, he's not calling it Lawrence Leung's Skepticism Hour or anything like that. It's just, oh, here's a funny show where I'm going to go and make fun of psychics and people who believe in aliens and things like that. And people watch and they go, oh, this show is really funny. And they say to their friends, hey, you should check out this show. This is really funny. And what's happening is they're learning skepticism and they're learning that it's okay to be skeptical. They're getting ideas on how could you test these things? How can you debunk these things? The idea that it's okay to debunk these things, and also how easy it is.
All right, I think that wraps it up. That was really, really interesting, and it's good to check back in with you and see that you're doing good work. I look forward, in a year's time, you'll be doing much, much more.
And it'll be run by Liz in a year's time. I'll just be sitting up the back reading Harry Potter.
And I'll just be ranting and raged.
Ranting and bullying the students.
Yeah, exactly.
But in a year's time, it'll just be the two of us in there.
Oh, no, that's terrible.
That'll be a...
No, I can't
driven everybody away.
I can't wait till we get old and then I have, like, a white beard and you have, like, a white beard. And we're just sitting down, like, having coffee, being really old and really annoying and just ranting to each other.
So like we are right now.
Yeah, pretty much.
Absolutely. Without the white beards.
Exactly.
All right, thanks so much. Fantastic.
Thanks, Ted.
So I hope you enjoyed that. Thanks, Ted, for putting that together. It's always great to have one of your interviews on the show. Now, we should be back next week with a normal episode, but if we don't, then we'll actually be starting the Unfiltered Thoughts podcast, which is the little side project thing that I'm putting on where I get young people and go to a cafe and chat about a particular topic. Now, I'm really excited to start this. If you're a young person who lives in Melbourne, and can get to roughly the city area and wants to talk about any sort of skeptical or scientific topic with me over a coffee, I should be able to buy it for you, even though I'm not that wealthy and we don't have a lot of funds to spare. It's okay. I can shout you a coffee. It's fine. Then get in touch via the normal channels. YoungAUSSkeptics@gmail.com is generally the best way to get in touch. But you can also, you know, catch us on Facebook or Twitter. Before I get out of your head, because you're listening to this right now, probably with headphones. I don't know. You could be listening with speakers. Whatever. It doesn't matter. Tom is doing a Melbourne Fringe Festival show all by himself called Love Factually. It's from the 29th of September, which is a Sunday, all the way to the 6th of October, which is also a Sunday. There's going to be no show on Monday the 30th or Wednesday the 2nd of October. And it's all about animal sex and reproduction. Everyone's going to be going. It's going to be amazing. So head to melbournefringe.com.au and search for Love Factually to find out more information. Or you can go to youngausskeptics.com and find the show notes for this episode and then click on the link that I provide. That's an easy way to go if you're in Melbourne. Come on down. It's going to be a great night or two or however many nights it's going to be running for, which I think is about six. So, you know, come every single night. It's going to be great. Other than that, there's no real announcement. So I'll just get out of your head and let you get back to the life that you were leading. That's how podcasts work. Okay. See you next week. Bye.